making the change to cleaner, more sustainable technologies. How thought leaders on the First Coast are leading the way. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio. And now make sure to catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, even though state officials are reportedly banned from using the term climate change, local thought leaders are pushing ahead with a transition to a greener economy. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, a preview of two important March Madness games right here in Jacksonville, how the Jack Sports Council is bringing big league games to town. Plus, The Spectator with all this weekend's events, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, eyebrows were raised around the state and even the world last week after the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting told us on Sunday that Governor Rick Scott's administration ordered employees, contractors, and volunteers with the state's Department of Environmental Protection not to use the terms climate change and global warming in official communications. The governor's office today is denying that. But this unofficial policy, which has been independently confirmed by multiple former DEP employees, is being seen by climate and environmental scientists as detrimental to the future health of Florida's economy, since, after all, our Sunshine State is the most vulnerable in the nation to the effects of sea level rise. So, this morning, we begin the hour with a look at the work of one local thought leader on this important issue. Hazel Henderson is the founder of Ethical Markets Media. She's a noted futurist, evolutionary economist, author, and consultant on sustainable development. She's on the line now from St. Johns County with more about Florida and climate and her organization's Green Transition Scorecard. Hazel Henderson, a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much.
And right now to our callers, we want to know, what's your reaction to published reports that state environmental officials were unofficially banned from using the term climate change? And what are your questions about ethical markets and the transition to a more sustainable economy? Get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/First Coast Connect. Email and tweet the show, and we also welcome your comments on Facebook. So, Hazel, what was your reaction to the report? It was in the Miami Herald and other outlets that former employees of the DEP say they were unofficially, no written policy, but they were verbally told not to use the term climate change. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it was embarrassing, really, you know, because we have a global audience, mostly of investors, green investors. And so we were getting messages over our email saying, hey, what's going on? Messages coming from Europe and coming from Asia and Latin America. We have an affiliate in Brazil. And so it was really embarrassing. But, you know, we are really the good news show. And what we try to look at is the glass half full, really. And the kind of thing that I picked up from the Miami Herald, when was it? On the 23rd, is that the Knight Foundation has put up a $70,000 prize with the XPRIZE people, you know, at Singular University. And they were saying, okay, no more trivial apps. Let's first face up to real global problems. And this is a competition in Miami to address sea level rise in that city. So what we try to post every day is the news of the great transition that's going on now from the fossil fuel era and earlier eras, you know, where humans used whale oil and coal and all of this, to what I call the solar age. And that was how I connected with Dennis Bushnell, who you had on the show a little while ago, the chief scientist at NASA. And he wrote the foreword to my ebook called Mapping the Global Transition to the Solar Age. And basically, that's what we do, and that's why we have this Green Transition Scoreboard, which we're just about to put out. We update it twice a year. And we are, the last one that we did last August is on green bonds, growing green infrastructure, and all of the green building and efficiency that's going on also in cities like Jacksonville. So basically, the hidden story really is that all of these new renewable energy technologies and efficiency and technologies really fitting with the way nature works are all now going mainstream all over the world.
Including here in Florida?
Yes, definitely. And, I was for many years at UF in Gainesville. And even back then, there was a solar energy museum. Yes, it's still there. Because, you know, this technology, all of these technologies that's getting on people's rooftops now, you know, are just, you know, really 50 years old. Many of them are 100 years old. And it's only now that we've begun to realize that basically those free photons from the sun every day are the lowest hanging fruit and the cheapest. And what we've been tracking is that now solar and wind power are now competitive or even cheaper all over the world than fossil fuels.
Let me ask you a couple of follow-up questions. First, what are your thoughts about the bipartisan coalition Floridians for Solar Choice pushing the state legislature right now as they're in session to make it easier for Floridians to buy and sell their own solar power units? And how do you see this transition to a solar economy unfolding in our state and our country? As you said, other countries around the world are way ahead of us on this.
Yes, they are. And I think partly we really have to look at the old electric utility industry. And, of course, this is not just Florida Power and Light, so many others all across the country. And their business model now is kind of broken. And what they're realizing is that people now are saving energy with more efficient appliances, efficient home building, and all of that kind of thing. And yet all of their business models are based on more and more energy consumption. So they're really in crisis. And some of them are trying to do things like saying, well, look, let's get everybody into electric cars. Okay, that's fine as long as the electricity is produced renewably, not with coal or oil or nuclear, because none of those old sources really are efficient and they're pricing themselves out of the market.
Including nuclear?
Oh, yes. Yes, nuclear could never have survived without all the government subsidies and the Price-Anderson Act, you know. Which,
then let me ask you, Hazel, how can solar become competitive it competes for subsidies?
The way most of the subsidies, 95% of all the subsidies go to nuclear and fossil fuels, and only 5% of the subsidies go to solar. And we are now at the point where solar, in many cases, does not need subsidies anymore. And so what we have to do, say, here in Florida, is to get the electric utilities to allow net metering, as it's called, like they have in Arizona, where my daughter lives. And basically, they have solar panels on their roof, and they sell their extra electricity back to the Arizona Power Company. And their electric bill, and they're really heavy users of computers and appliances and everything, their electric bill is either zero or they get a refund of about $5 a month.
Let me ask you quickly, too, as a follow-up about your green transition scorecard, as you report on your website, and you are the creator of this benchmark system, $5.7 trillion in private investments and commitments since 2007. You project $10 trillion by the year 2020 to scale innovations and reduce costs in green tech. Can you give us a couple of quick examples of where you're seeing that in our state?
Well, I think it's growing in Florida, but I have to say that Florida really has to move much more rapidly. So we report, we really support all of the efforts going on to get net metering going, you know, so that it is possible for homeowners to install panels and be able to sell excess power back to the power companies. And they are here in this state, they are resisting it. I served under John Mills speakership back in the 80s on a commission on Florida's future. And I found, spent a lot of time in Tallahassee, and I found that really Florida Power and Light kind of is so heavy a lobbyist over there that it's really very difficult, you know, for legislators to go against them. And yet we really do have to open this whole thing up. And of course, the solar and wind industries and the renewable clean building industries, they don't really have lobbyists yet. They're just getting going. And I wrote a book in 1981 called The Politics of the Solar Age, because I was a policy wonk in Washington at the time. And I realized that we were going to be in this tug of war between the incumbent industries of the 19th and 20th centuries and these new industries of the 21st century. And that struggle, that politics of the solar age, is still going on. And that's why we do the Green Transition Scoreboard, just to make sure that people understand that even though governments may still be captured by old special interests, private investors are perfectly free to go and make money and get in on the ground floor of all these new technologies.
And lots of calls for Hazel Henderson, St. Augustine's thought leader on climate and green tech, the founder of Ethical Markets and the Green Transition Scorecard. What are your
scoreboard?
Scoreboard already.
Scoreboard.
What are your questions for Hazel? 549-2937 to join the show this morning. Scott in Mayport. Hello, Scott. Good morning.
Morning.
Hello, Scott.
You know, I'm in complete agreement with the guest. I think solar energy is great. All types of alternative energy. I'm kind of a geek over it. I subscribe to a magazine called Home Power. It's not light reading. It's not for everybody. It's more of an industry mag, or it caters to homesteaders, DIY. It's full of formulas and whatnot. But I wanted to comment on the Governor Scott administration message. You know, every administration tailors their message. You know, if they did prohibit the use of climate change, they claim that they did. Either way, let's not think of the story. It's interesting. I'm still out on whether the truly global warming is man-made, you know, because we're actually cooler now than we were in the year 800. You know, there's been the Little Ice Age, it's been warmer, it's been colder, water was underwater before, it'll be underwater again. And it's interesting, I look at a lot of different sources. One of them is Dr. Roy Spencer. He's a NASA scientist, he's a climate scientist. And your guest may want to comment on his work, but I get a kick out of reading his blog and his website, because he doesn't say a lot. He just provides a lot of charts and data, and if you look at it, you can see climate goes up, it goes down. The only debate, you know, he seems to think CO2 has very little to do with it. It has more to do with the currents, you know, the natural changes in climate. So I'd be curious to hear what the guest has to say about Dr. Spencer's work and her,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Thoughts.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. That's Scott out in Mayport. Hazel Henderson.
Yes. Well, when I was at the Office of Technology Assessment in Washington in the 70s, we began to really notice the CO2 buildup in the atmosphere. It was being picked up. And of course, it is absolutely incontrovertible that it is the fossil fuel, burning of fossil fuels all over the world, which is increasing the CO2 in the atmosphere and causing this greenhouse effect. But what we feel at Ethical Markets Media is that we don't really have a dog in all of this political fight. You know, and the climate deniers versus all of that stuff. We just know that 2 years ago, the United Nations 173 country members of the United Nations all agreed in Rio de Janeiro to move toward low-carbon economies and to stop subsidizing fossil fuels. And that is absolutely unstoppable. And that's really what we are picking up now. And the way it's going mainstream, I was just reading the current issue of Foreign Affairs. Now, that's about as mainstream a magazine as you'll ever find. And they have a whole section in this current issue saying solar power comes of age and how harnessing the sun got cheap and practical. And there's a whole bunch of articles there which I would commend to our friend. And you see, he and I totally agree. I agree with Scott that obviously capturing the free photons, is the lowest hanging fruit. You know, all we have to learn to do is to harness that photons as well as plants do with photosynthesis, which provides our food supply. So it's kind of a no-brainer.
To use the sun, right, yeah.
Yeah, so we just stay away from all of the arguments, you know, and just, that's why we did our green transition scoreboard.
Yeah, everyone can get their arms around dollars and cents. That is a fact.
Yes, absolutely.
549-2937. Lori on the west side. Good morning, Lori.
Hello.
And hello,
nice
Lori.
To meet you ladies and see you again. I am familiar with Roy Spencer too, and I'm in communication with him, and I want to say is, what is your most efficient solar collector?
Well, it just depends, really. I think that there's tremendous advances going on with solar.
Here's my disagreement, if I may, because we just heard you. The most efficient solar collector on this earth is the trees, and they turn into fossil fuels as you cut them down. So why don't we take the most efficient solar collectors and use them in a more efficient way? I have no problem with efficiencies, but I do have a problem with people like you coming in and saying you got a machine that does it better than nature. And that's all I have to say.
All right, Lori, thanks for the call.
And I'll take your answer off the air.
Lori, thanks.
Well, there
go ahead.
Again, you see, I would agree with Lori that nature is the main designer on this planet. And if it were not for plants having invented the collection of solar cells from solar energy from the sun, we would all be living on a cold, dead planet. So I totally agree that the capturing of solar energy up to now has been done by all of the living systems. And, of course, trees are tremendously efficient at capturing solar energy. But we are now a planet with, 7.5 billion inhabitants. And there are many simple ways where solar energy can be collected extremely efficiently without burning trees or using biomass, but instead in villages now all over Africa and Asia, you have very simple solar cells, which are extremely efficient. And you have solar cookers, which are nothing more than flexible mirrors, which concentrate the sun's rays and burn and cook food. So we don't have to be Luddites. I mean, why wouldn't we use the technologies that we already have? I mean, we humans are very clever and inventive. So let's not put ourselves down completely. Let's redesign our technologies and work the way nature works. And that's a lot of the work we do, talking with asset managers. And we have conferences here on how asset managers can really learn how the planet actually functions and to really change their business models to make sure that they're not just beholden to old special interests and not beholden to government subsidies and all of that. But look at the real world and fit the new business models to the way nature actually works. That was how I really got in touch with NASA's chief scientist, was, you know, that he is very much in the same, you know, looking at the planet.
And what do you, quickly, let me jump in, since two callers now have referenced another scientist, Roy Spencer, what are your thoughts of his work?
I do not know Roy Spencer.
And you don't agree with his conclusions?
I don't. Well, if his conclusions are that it is not CO2 loading the atmosphere, which is increasing the current rate of global warming, then I would not agree.
Okay.
But I would agree that, of course, the planet, the planet's temperatures have varied tremendously. We know that from ice cores and all throughout our history. And the last huge warming of the planet from CO2 was back in the Permian. And that caused, you know, a massive extinction, but that was hundreds of millions of years ago.
And, lots,
and we really
and let me,
do have to look at what's going on today.
And let me just jump in, because there are callers waiting on hold to connect with St. John's County's Hazel Henderson, founder of Ethical Markets and the Green Transition Scoreboard, 549-2937. Mitchell in Palatka. Hey, Mitchell, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, this is a subject very near to my heart. I have been off the grid now for 4 years. And,
good for you, Mitchell.
I run my goat farm exclusively with the solar. And, of course, I burn wood for heating in the wintertime and a little bit of cooking when in colder weather. I've got an electric bicycle that now has about 3,000 or 4,000 miles and is worn out from being charged with solar power. And I'm building a large motorcycle that's converted to run on electricity also. But my most important development is solar powered air conditioning. What I do is I during very cold weather I pump very very icy cold water into a well that I call the cold well, and all during the winter I save up cold water, and then during the summer I pump it out and it goes through a small radiator in an insulated room with a fan to air condition the room. So I'm working very, very hard on this stuff.
That's great,
I would say,
Mitchell.
That you
thank
are
you.
A good practical scientist. And get in touch with us, because I think there's quite a lot of people might be interested in your inventions, particularly the electric motorbike.
Wonderful calls coming in. Pat in Fleming Island. Hello, Pat.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, Pat.
First of all, it's no surprise about Governor Scott and our legislature saying you can't use climate change and words like that. That's so typical of those guys. I, too, am a believer in solar power. I have a solar power building that I actually get money back from Clay Electric every year. And I drive a Chevrolet Bolt that I charge with solar power. And it's wonderful. It's so efficient. But what we have to realize here in Florida is that we have to work around government. And that's the way with all of these important things. Tallahassee is no help to us, and they're not going to be.
Right. I mean,
the governor, he met with those six scientists last year, and he believes the bloggers and not the people that make it their absolute profession. Who will study it for 20 years, and then he'll believe a blogger instead. And if you go on the internet, you can see this guy Roy Spencer. He's a wonk. they all believe him, but they believe what they want to believe because it's very convenient.
Yes.
You have to disregard those kind of people.
Okay, Pat, thanks for that. And William and Fernandina. William and Fernandina. Hi, William.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Hi, William.
Hi. Yes, when I listen to this debate or argument over solar versus fossil fuel, I never seem to hear what the cost of producing these solar cells and all that, because much of the resources that go into making solar cells, as I understand it, come from China. And, you know, it takes fossil fuel to dig these rare earths up out of the ground and to put them through the manufacturing process that makes a final product from the solar cell. So when you compare it to kilowatt hours of making all these solar cells, how does that compare to just burning fossil fuels? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure, William. Thank you. Hazel.
Yes, very, very good, William. The whole thing is, of course, you're talking about life cycle analysis. And that's what we do around here, is that if you track all industrial processes from the mining all the way through to the production and the distribution and the sales and the trading, this is the only way that you can really come to the best conclusions. And I have been doing that for decades. You know, this was something was developed at the Office of Technology Assessment. And basically, I've written 11 books about all of this, and you can find all of my stuff on our website. But basically, if you do a full life cycle analysis, you have got to go with solar, wind, and energy efficiency. And radical energy efficiency, we have an energy efficiency expert who is looking at the whole economy now, and he says that actually 40% of the energy and materials that we put into our economy are completely wasted. And so that's a huge business and profit opportunity. How do we tighten all of that thing up, make our cities more efficient, have more public transit, opportunities for bicycles and for parks and people. So you have to take a really broad analysis of all of this. You can't just focus on one technology versus another at the end point use.
It is absolutely fascinating to speak with you. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate it.
Well, lots of fun. Thanks, Melissa. Take care.
Hazel Henderson, an author, economist, thought leader, and consultant on sustainable development, the founder of Ethical Markets Media and the Landmark Green Transition Scoreboard. Go to her website for more at ethicalmarkets.com. Much more still ahead. Later, a look at all this weekend's events around town, including a chat with comedian Lewis Black. He's in town tonight. But up next, we've got a look ahead to March Madness in Jacksonville. That's in a moment.
Jacksonville's next mayor. Where do the candidates stand on the issues affecting the First Coast, such as pensions, taxes, public health and safety, downtown development, and the city's human rights ordinance? WJCT has teamed up with First Coast News and the Florida Times Union to present Jacksonville 2015, the first debate with mayoral candidates Alvin Brown, Bill Bishop, and Lenny Curry. Jacksonville 2015, tonight at 7 on WJCT Public Television.
I called him the Candyman.
Staffers knew what a VA doctor was up to, but no one was listening.
I said that your own chief of psychiatry hands out narcotics like they're candy. And the director, like, sat back in his chair and, like, laughed.
Next time on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Sunday at 1 on WJCT 89.9.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
The the Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida Public Radio station.
Weeknights at 6:30 on WJCT 89.9.
Welcome back to the show. Well, it's a cultural gem on the First Coast, and if you've never been, you really owe it to yourself to stop by Friday Musicale in Riverside. They have a series of upcoming concerts featuring renowned international artists. Programming Chair Dr. Christoph Bernacki is here now with a preview and more about the mission and history of Friday Musicale. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
You know, we'll talk about the events in a minute, but first, Friday Musicale is kind of tucked away on a side street in Riverside, and you go inside, and it's just amazing. For people that have never been, tell us all about this organization.
This is one of the hidden gems of our community. I like to refer to it as the organization with a very rich past and very exciting future. The organization has been in existence since 1890. Very few people in the community realize this, but Friday Musicale has been going on strong for 125 years. It originated as a ladies' club for music. It continued for about 30 years as an organization only for ladies, and from about 1920s, men were allowed to join.
Oh, they finally let them
finally,
in.
Finally, yes. So amazing.
Usually it's
happen.
The other way around, Doctor.
That's right. Absolutely. So the organization has a very rich history of featuring stars of classical music. Nellie Melba sang at Friday Musicale. Walter Damrosch was featured. Rosa Poncel, Fritz Kreisler, Sergei Rachmaninoff, and Ignacy Paderewski. So this is quite a lineup of international stars from the last century of classical music. The organization has a very rich past and continues to a very exciting future. As many of the concert goers may realize, the organization is changing very quickly. This is not just the old Friday Musicale that we are accustomed to from 100 years ago, but this is a brand new organization with a very bright future. We have an exciting lineup of international artists coming up this season, and we would like to continue in that vein for the following seasons to come. We've established some very exciting partnerships with other organizations in the community, like UNF, and this may lead to very interesting possibilities. This Friday, we will feature two Italian artists, Giovanni Lanzini and Fabio Montemoli, are a very rare classical duo, classical guitar and clarinet. This is not
Why is that rare?
This is not a normal pairing. Usually
okay.
those instruments are not
they
put together.
They don't normally go together?
They do go together quite well, but to put them on an entire program of music, it's not seen all that often. This is a very unusual pairing, and it presents a very interesting sonority. They have a lineup of very interesting arrangements of both classical pieces and traditional Italian folk tunes, even opera aria arrangements.
Well, we have a little bit of a preview. You were kind enough to bring some music with you. So we're going to take a listen now to give folks an idea of what the live performance will be like. That's beautiful.
Yes, we have two concerts this Friday, one at 11 a.m. and the second one at 7:30. So if you haven't been to Friday Musicale yet, you really should come out and check out the concerts. 2 weeks from now, on March 27th, we'll feature Gino Santo and Daniela Gentile, another Italian duo, trumpet and piano this time, chamber music galore at Friday Musicale. In June, we'll feature Laurent Boccobza, French-American pianist, as well as Pierre-Laurent Bouchalin, who's visiting us from France. For the following season, in November, we're planning to feature Hugo Wolf Quartet from Vienna. which will be quite a treat. This is something that we're planning to organize together with UNF Kummer Family Chamber Series. The ensemble from Vienna will be presented at UNF as well as at Friday Musicale. So this is a whole new lineup of artists visiting us here at Friday Musicale, something which we were not able to feature in the past.
And why is that? And you've been instrumental in bringing in these really cutting-edge performers. How has this change come about?
The organization has changed. We are looking into bringing more exciting programming, more exciting artists. We are able to collaborate with other institutions in the city, and we think that this is an international art form and behooves us to feature international artists. Fabio and Giovanni are visiting New York, coming from here. So this was very fortuitous for us to be able to welcome them to Friday Musicale for this Friday. We try to program the performances in such a way that we look for artists who are either already on tour in the United States or will be, especially in Florida, for example, like Hu Volk Quartet will be here in November. So it's very easy for us to plug them in into our concert lineup because they are here already.
Tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved in this.
I'm a professor of voice and opera at University of North Florida. I've been here for 10 years. This is my area of expertise. This is what I do. I'm also the artistic director of Kummer Family Foundation Concert Series at UNF. So this was essentially my way of contributing to the community in terms of organizing concerts and being an artistic director for the concert series at UNF. This is how I came to do this. I'm a classical singer, I am an opera stage director, I'm a professor of voice, and this is what I do. I also perform internationally. I sing in Europe regularly. I had over 15 concerts in Europe last year. So this is essentially my life. This is what I do.
You are such a treasure in the art and culture community in this area. It's a pleasure to get have you tell your story. And let me ask you, how do you pick the artists? How do you find the artists that you think will present the best concerts?
This is quite tricky. Scheduling is always very difficult. If the artist is available, then we don't have available dates.
Have a little experience with that here on this program.
Exactly. This is always quite challenging. However, we always try to find the artists that are available at a specific time and artists that can present an exciting, unique program for us as well. There's abundance of artists out there, but it has to be someone that can really fit the profile of the organization, have something to offer to our community. We have very unique tastes here on the First Coast. We like certain things that we're not quite accustomed to others.
You're very diplomatic, Doctor.
Thank you very much. I hope
so. But you're trying to nudge people to widening their horizons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Last month, we presented a German pianist and composer, Martin Münch, who presented his own program of very interesting, very cutting-edge compositions. And surprisingly, this was very well received by the audience.
Well, I think this community is changing. And
absolutely,
I think that this is a reflection of that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
One of many. And so, again, concerts on the 13th and the 27th, for people who are just now hearing about this, how can they get their tickets?
The concerts are free. This is another wonderful thing Friday Musicale, is that we are presenting these concerts for free as our contribution to society, so to speak. We are contemplating a possibility of charging some tickets for the concerts in the future. However, as of right now, the concerts are still free, and really, we would like to keep it that way. We have quite a following of a very dedicated audience at Friday Musicale, but of course, we're always looking for new audience members, for new demographic to attend these concerts.
So Friday Musicale, this Friday evening, and also a daytime concert, you're located on King Street, correct?
Actually, no. We are at 645 Oak Street.
It's Oak.
Yes.
645 Oak Street in Riverside.
Yes.
The vaunted Friday Musicale with a long tradition on the First Coast. Come on out and enjoy the free concerts this month. A pleasure. And we're going to close with a little more music from the artists. Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you, Marissa.
We were joined by Programming Chair Dr. Christoph Bernacki. Here's a little bit more of a preview of the Friday Musicale concerts. Back in a moment with The Spectator. Thank you.
Congratulations to writer James English, winner of the first quarter of The Square. Now it's your chance to show off your art, whether it's music, visual art, sculpture, poetry, and more. Go to wjct.org/The Square, check out the amazing local talent, and submit your work now.
When a mama and daddy moved into the house across the street.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, 47 Republican senators warn Iran that any deal with this administration could be undone by the next. Debate over the threat and its implications for U.S. presidential power.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
This Friday on Closing the Loop, Carol Childers was a Navy wife who managed to find newspaper jobs wherever her husband was transferred. But she wasn't going anywhere with her career, so Carol figured out a way around that challenge. Closing the Loop, every Friday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning. WJCT's Travel and Entertainment Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through March 16th at 9 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Finally, this hour, from Journey to Steve Miller, Elvis Costello, and a debate you might have heard about. Lots to do across the First Coast this weekend. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the selfie queen of the First Coast, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here today. You know, I was looking at your blog. Let's begin by mentioning that we are going to have a little debate here tonight at WJCT.
Yes,
you might have heard something about this.
I'm very excited.
Yes.
And that's something I never thought I would say about politics, other than like House of Cards or Scandal.
You have made a concerted ongoing attempt, a successful one, I might add, take selfies with all of the candidates running for office.
Oh, yes,
yes. Yes, it's been an important part of our political discourse, I must say.
What can I say?
And so that debate is tonight at WJCT.
I will not ask for any selfies, don't worry.
7 p.m.
I'll be on my best behavior.
You'll be in the studio tweeting various observations.
I will. I'm so excited.
Yes, we're all excited about it. 7 p.m. on television and on radio. But that's just one thing on the list. What else is going on, Spectator?
Well, I wanted to mention there were a couple, because, you know, watching the debates is kind of, you know, like watching the Oscars or something. You want to sit there with your friends and go, like, oh, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe he wore that. So the North Florida LGBT Leadership PAC is having an event at Bold City Brewery at 5, and they're going to have some candidates there also. Obviously not candidates for mayor, though Omega Allen might be there since she wasn't invited to the big show.
Right.
And the Jax Young Coalition is having one at Three Layers at 5:30, and Sunrise Cinema is also going to show it on the big screen.
And all the campaigns, I think, are having their own debate watch parties as well.
I've heard
so
some of the candidates I've heard of actually going to the one at Bold City Brewery.
All righty. So no shortage of viewing parties tonight.
So if you say, I didn't know anything about it, then I don't know where you've been.
Hey, they know now.
They know now.
Also tonight, Journey and the Steve Miller Band coming to town.
Yes. I like to do
that's
that.
All you got?
I just like to do that to throw you off every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. You got to keep me on my toes.
Okay, so Journey has had 19 top 40 singles.
Now,
that's
who's
crazy?
Is the new guy still their lead singer, the Asian guy
that
sounds exactly
he's
like
Filipino,
Steve Perry?
And
Filipino, yes.
And the whole story of how they were trying to find a replacement, they went on YouTube and he was in a cover band and they found him and Neil Sean called him and he's like, yeah, whatever. And no, I saw the documentary. It's crazy.
Yeah. Then there was a movie made out of that, Rockstar, with Mark Wahlberg, that kind
of... That was actually Judas Priest.
...copied that whole tale.
Judas Priest.
Okay. And then Neil Sean ran off with that that guy's wife that sneaked into the White House. So there's a lot of drama around Journey.
I know.
Is what we're saying here.
I know. But, I mean, from the documentary I saw, he runs around very... energetic sound, just like him. It's crazy.
Okay, so that's tonight at the arena.
And the Steve Miller Band.
With the Steve Miller Band. Hey, another legend. So come on out and see that.
6:45. It's
a show. Now, the other day I had the opportunity to speak with the great Lewis Black. He is doing a show tonight at UNF.
Yes, he is.
The Rant is Due, part duh.
Oh, I just got it. The Rant is Due.
Yeah, yeah.
Not The Rant.
He's an angry guy. Here's Lewis.
Part of my act is I took a long trip through Europe. I performed through Europe. So along the way, I did material in Europe. So that material came back with me. The core of my act is when I look something in it and it makes me angry. And because I'm funniest when I'm angry.
He actually is.
He needs a lozenge or something.
Yeah, he had a little bit of a cold. I think they got a lot of snow up there in New York
right
now.
And he yells all the time, so I guess it makes your voice.
Yeah, yeah. Hoarse. The Rant is Due with Lewis Black at the UNF Fine Arts Center. That's tonight at 7:30. If you're not into politics, maybe go check out a little comedy there.
Because I'm sure he won't say anything political.
No, not at all. He will, but you'll be laughing, not crying.
That's true.
Okay, the Gate River Run is this weekend.
Gate River Run, yes. The largest 15K in the country, I believe.
I think that's right.
There are like 15,000 people running. I will not be one of them.
No, you will not be putting yourself through that.
I did my stint walking it and twirling the baton. It's kind of going to be tough to top that. So,
where did you do that?
I did it at the River Run a couple years ago.
Did you?
I twirled the baton and I raised money for Lee High School Band. I had a band hat. Like the Lee High School Band. I have a world record for it, Melissa. Do you know me at all?
How do I not know this?
I will post it. No, I have a video. Karen Fagans walked with me and shot my video.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on.
How did I miss that?
I don't know, but yes, I do.
That's
have a world
huge.
Record.
That's a huge event in the spectator's
life. I twirled
a baton
the whole time.
Man. Well, Carrie won't be there, but you should still. It's one of the
go anyway.
It's one of the biggest events of the year. The Gate River Run Saturday at 8. It starts bright and early at Everbank Field.
Yes, get there early.
Yeah, get there early, obviously. And no shortage of musical talent on the First Coast this weekend. Elton John, right after Journey pulls out, Elton John is
Elton
coming.
Elton John,
in.
Little tidbit for you. Elton was the very first artist to play at the new veteran, well, it's not new anymore, but Veterans Memorial Arena.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And his real name, which I believe you know,
Reginald
Kenneth Dwight. Years ago, I went to an Elton John Billy Joel concert in Tampa.
Uh-huh.
And we got to go backstage.
Ooh.
And I got to meet everybody except Elton.
Oh.
Yeah. I was not allowed anywhere near Elton.
Oh. Which you a stalker? And they
I did not
you?
Stalk them, unlike some people I know. But he was a bit high maintenance, let's just say that.
Okay. He wasn't feeling it.
But a legend.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I guess
you can be that way when you're a legend.
Yeah. So that's Saturday night at the arena, the great Elton John.
Then, as if that weren't enough, Saturday, John Mellencamp, formerly known as Johnny Cougar, formerly known as John Cougar, formerly known as John Cougar Mellencamp, now known as John Mellencamp.
Now known as Meg Ryan's ex-boyfriend. As well.
And some supermodel. He was married to some supermodel.
Yeah.
Times Union Center, 7:30 Saturday. And as if Elton John and John Mellencamp weren't enough.
There's more.
On Saturday, Elvis Costello, previously known as Declan Patrick Aloysius McManus.
That's his real name.
That's his real name.
Husband to the great Diana Krall.
Yes, he will be at the Florida Theater at 8.
Man, this is a great music weekend.
I
would go see every single one if I could. This is great stuff.
I know.
Okay, and then moving on, Sunday, a huge event in Metropolitan Park right next door to us, the 2015 Community First Natural Life Music Festival. This is a great spring event.
Yes, it is. It's kind of like they say that it's to help people like focus and have fun and find like happiness. And, you know, so it's not like a, you know, crazy rock concert where people
no,
like,
no,
it's all about
it's laid
chilling
back.
Chilling out.
Sure. And it's free, open to the public. Lots of fun.
They have craft food vendors and artisans markets. They have two stages, and the proceeds benefit Children's Home Society of Florida.
Yeah, and the founder of Natural Life, Patty Hughes, this area, is just a brilliant businesswoman and contributor to the community. A great event Sunday, the Natural Life Music Fest at Metropolitan Park. Yeah. Also Sunday, after you do that, go on over to Hemming Park, because Hemming Park has programming every day of the year nowadays.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy.
And they're doing BrewBQ. How can you go wrong with that?
I like how they put, it's BBQ and beer. It's a Porkalicious Sunday Fun Day. That's what they're calling it.
Yeah. So it's beer and barbecue sold separately.
It's free to walk in. The smells are free. The people watching, free.
Yes.
But if you want some Porkalicious Sunday Fun Day and some beer, you're going to have to pull out your wallet.
And coming up next week, two March Madness games will be here in Jacksonville, thanks to the great work of Jack Sports, Alan Verlander, and Rick Catlett. We were unable to get them on today. We'll have to try to figure out what happened with scheduling. But that's also a big thing going on around town this month, March Madness. And, of course, UNF in the show.
That is crazy.
It's great. Isn't that exciting?
It's awesome.
Also exciting tonight, it will be, if you hang around outside WJCT tonight around, say, 6:30, you can meet the spectator. Because that's all anybody really cares about.
First, I thought you were going to say you can meet the cats.
No. Well, the cats are good, too.
The cat, one greeted me again this morning.
We tend to have a lot of cats that hang around our building.
They're very sweet, though.
They're very sweet.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing you tonight's debate with the hashtag JaxPaul, P-O-L.
JaxPaul, okay. Got it. On it.
Carrie will be live tweeting. Follow her at The Spectator. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. See you tonight.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback for us, we always want to hear it. We really welcome your emails. firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, 47 Republican senators warned Iran that any deal with the Obama administration could be undone by the next. A look at the debate over the threat and its implications for U.S. presidential power. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day, and make sure to catch tonight's debate on WJCT television and radio. It starts at 7 p.m.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.